What's up, everybody? It's Recover Together. You've got your host, Lip, here. We're hanging out with Laggy Lawrence over here and Mr. Phoebes the Titan. And we're going to get right into things right after this. Welcome back, everybody. That was Can't Stop by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. This is Recover Together, and we're back after 2 weeks of nothingness. Well,
together don't stop either.
Yeah, recovering together does not stop just because we do. But in those 2 weeks, we came up with a bunch of stuff we want to talk about. And I got to say, personally, I really missed this show. I really missed being here and being able to talk to everybody, being able to put my voice and my opinion out there. And it's just gotten stronger in the 2 weeks since I've been gone. But let's check in with everybody else. How you doing over there, Mr. Lawrence? Everything going okay?
Yeah, I'm a little laggy today.
Yeah, you know, no, laggy Lawrence.
I've been trying to pack too many things into my day, and I'm getting burned out for the week already, but the weekend's almost here, so.
Well, we appreciate you making time for this hour right here, because
always.
It's helpful not only to me, but to a lot of people that listen to it. What about you, Phoebes, Mr. Titan? How's everything been on your end?
Yeah, things are okay. I feel that pressure. Short weeks will do that, I find. We're trying to get back into the swing of things after a long weekend. But, you know, it's just taking things one step at a time. And I'm really trying to focus on trying to make peace with time. You know, that's a big thing for me right now is patience and letting higher powers kind of let things play out the way they're going to play out, and trusting that just because something isn't going on the time frame you think it should doesn't mean it's not going to happen, you know? So perseverance, commitment to what needs to be taken care of one day at a time.
Absolutely. That kind of ties into, you know, the whole thing with recovery too. It's just because something happens, you slip up or a relapse happens, it doesn't mean that you're not in recovery, which is what a lot of people tend to disagree with. I actually have, I spoke to a few people over this little break, and I told them that just because somebody wants to enter into recovery doesn't mean they have to be willing to stop completely right there. That's not what recovery is. The definition of recover is to be better than before. So, I mean, it's a process, you know? But that brings me to what today's topic is. We're going to be talking about addiction, depression, and creativity, and how they're all tied together, and the things that addicts will do to get their fixes, get their drugs and stuff, you know? Because some of them will go through extreme lengths and do pretty crazy things to people just to get what they want. And it's kind of a malicious form of creativity if you think about it. But there's other ways that we could channel it too, you know? Like for me, it's this show. For other people, it's the music industry. For even others like Lawrence right here, it's being an advocate or a counselor or something. So let's talk about that a little bit. What do you guys think about the creativity when you see it manifest through an addicted person? Like, do you feel like they are generally more creative than anyone else? Lawrence, you could if you have anything to say about it, you could jump in.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the people I've met in my journey of recovery are the most creative people that I've ever met in my life. And, you know, I kind of think of it as like, you know, kind of in a Star Wars sense of like, Luke Skywalker is really powerful and, you know, he's asked to come to the dark side and use his power there. And, you know, he resists. And I think a lot of times it's just, I see the potential in people. Like, I know people that are really good hustlers and they're really good at what they do, but if somehow they could take that energy and channel it into something else, you know, they could contribute something that they'd be proud of, you know?
Yeah. And that's sometimes a pretty big barrier to recovering, because the people that are stuck in the cycle of addiction, they feel like they don't have anything to contribute, and it's like they're stifled by their own mind because they are creative and they do have a lot to contribute to society. I just pulled up this article It's by Scientific American, and it's about how there's a link between addiction and creativity. And just to paraphrase a part of it, it says it seems to be a particular breed of person who succumbs to addiction, most recently exemplified by the late singer Amy Winehouse, which is a pop singer who overdosed. She's part of the 27 Club, and for those of you who don't know what that is, it's just a list of famous individuals, mostly musicians, who overdosed at the age of 27. But it goes on to say, so is there a link between creativity and addiction? To find out, Scientific American spoke with neuroscientist David Linden of Johns Hopkins. And it goes on, the doctor doesn't really say that there's a link between creativity and addiction, but there's a link between addiction and things that are prerequisite for creativity, like, you know, genetic determination and stuff, or even the things people go through and all of that. When you create something, you're rewarded with dopamine, and dopamine's the same neurotransmitter that's released when you do drugs. That's why people want to keep doing it, because they get that rush of pleasure that the dopamine brings with it. So I just thought it was a pretty cool little article, and it has some pretty good knowledge in it. If anybody wants to check it out, again, it's a link between addiction and creativity, but in the Scientific American.
Can I just add one little comment? So about the 27 Club, I did some scientific research on this a long time ago, and every 27 years, it's called what's called Saturn's return. Saturn takes 27 to 29 and a half years to completely rotate around the sun, and so when you reach 27 years old, you go through, like most people go through, like a big life change, either career change, breakup, engagement, relocation, some traumatic event in their life or whatever. So there is something that is connected to that. And I think of some of us that don't have any tools to deal with that kind of a challenge, and if you're already headstrong into the drug culture, you know, it's not a good mix.
No, not at all. But you know, go ahead, Phoebes, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, I mean, my take from looking at the literature on this is that it's really hard to kind of scientifically nail down exactly why or how creativity is connected to mental health or to addiction, but it's sort of undeniable that there's a link. So, you know, there's a lot of different theories that we're already starting to get into about why that link exists. You know, I think you've both already hit on a couple. Like, one, I think, is that to survive mental illness or addiction requires resilience and perseverance and creativity, right? To be able to figure out how to survive and how to get through that. So I think there's a way in which people who are struggling through that also have this secret tool set, you know, that if you can look at it through that strength-based approach, you know, maybe can help with some of the self-hate or the down talk. It's like, look, yeah, this is how you're struggling through life, but it comes with a set of tools that you can lean into. And then your point about, you know, creativity literally produces dopamine, right? It's sort of natural that could be. To me, that kind of suggests the idea that creativity as an outlet can be a really powerful healing tool. Or, you know, like, I mean, medication-assisted treatment in some ways is finding something to replace the chemical effects that you're addicted to. So similarly, art therapy or creative outlets can become a therapeutic outlet that you're still getting that dopamine release, right? But maybe you can start to get that without being quite so dependent on drugs. But, you know, there's other more complex theories about, you know, the kind of brain that's both creative and might be tied. And I'll get into that more later in the show. But, you know, I just want to point out for folks who are struggling with addiction or mental illness to value actually the way in which your mind, the difference in your mind and your experience in your life has a whole lot of potential. I mean, Lip, you creating this podcast is an incredible creative outlet and creative production. You know, this podcast exemplifies exactly what you're talking about. So,
yeah, no, I absolutely agree. That's why this has been a topic I've been wanting to talk about for a long time, because my brain, I don't feel works in exactly the same way as most people's. I'm not going to say that I'm different from everybody else, but I feel emotions a lot more strongly than a lot of people. And things that don't really mean much to some people mean a lot to me. Like, it's kind of, you could kind of think of it like how penguins will give their mate a pebble. And that'll be the sign or the symbol of their everlasting love. So they search that beach all day long for what that perfect pebble is, and it means something to them, and stuff like that really means something to me. And that could be a strength, you know. It could also be a weakness, because there's people who can pick up on your emotional susceptibility and kind of use it against you to try to manipulate you into, I don't know, feeling something that isn't real. Or, but
I don't call that not a weakness, but a vulnerability. It doesn't make you weak. Yeah. It just means there's some vulnerability to manage.
Absolutely. That is definitely a better word. But I mean, not everybody's like that, and other people channel their creativity into beautiful things. Like you just said, this podcast, I think, is a beautiful thing, and it's actually being listened to. Like I have people come up and tell me that they heard my show or they listened to my show, and it really makes a difference to some people. So even if some people think that they can turn their vulnerabilities against me, I don't think I'm going to change who I am because of it, and I don't think anybody else should ever do that either. So I just want to say, if anybody out there is feeling like they're not strong enough because they feel a certain way, or like their addiction is just controlling their life entirely, or there's another way, and you don't have to sacrifice what makes you you, because that's the best part of you, you know? You could use that to make your life so much more beautiful. You just have to channel it in a different way and really believe in it. It gets hard sometimes. It really does, but it's not the end, and it's not going to always be that way. You just have to really try to change, you know?
Yeah, and I think being aware of your vulnerabilities and weaknesses, having that awareness can help in times where you need to protect yourself, you know?
Absolutely. How could you know that you need to protect yourself unless you were shown that that is a vulnerable trait of yours? Like, how would anybody know that there's another person that could try to turn something of that's so beautiful or so real against someone else unless it's happened before? So I don't really regret anything that's ever happened in my life. I look at everything as a learning experience, and it all is a part of what makes me me, and it's all a part of my journey, whether it be using or being clean. Everything is part of my recovery, because I've verbalized and I've communicated the fact that I don't want to be an addict anymore. So who's to say that that's not true? Even if sometimes it doesn't look to be true from the outside, it doesn't mean that's it's not true intrinsically. So anything, like, look at all of these famous people that are definitely addicts, and all of the beautiful things they create. Like, if we could all just learn how to channel that energy inside of us into something like that, the world would be so much better. It would be such a nicer place to be, such a nicer place to live. And that's what really bothers me the most when people are victimized or something. It's like, this world is such a beautiful place, and it's not fair that people can feel so strongly or see someone like as they could be versus as they really are, and there still be so much evil and so much, like, just everything. It's crazy. It really is crazy.
Sometimes we don't realize the cues and the red flags from people. You know, like Eminem said, I am whatever you say I am.
Whatever you say I am.
If I wasn't, why would I say I was, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes we have to, when people tell us, like, hey, I'm this or that, and I'm trouble, I'm chaos.
Or listen when other people tell you that a person is like that. It's,
instead of saying, oh, no, it'll be different this time.
Just sometimes you want to see the better in people, and it's really not there. Or it is there, and they don't want to be that part of themselves. So there's really nothing you can do until they make the decision themselves.
Yeah, it's always there.
To your point, too, we live in, like, such a black and white world. It's like, you're a good person or a bad person. You're, you know, and it's not that way. And I think the best way to help somebody through a part of themselves that is a challenge or is harming them is to really honor and bolster and strengthen the parts of them that are their strengths, right? Because it's still you have to meet the person where they are and who they are. And I think we live in a world, I think this is part of this connection, that's pretty hostile toward artists. It's very hard to survive as an artist. It's very hard to make a living as an artist. It's very hard to be taken seriously as an artist. Even if you do make it, it's very competitive then. You know, fame comes with all its own stress. So, you know, I think as a society, too, we've got to treat people who have a different way of expressing themselves and producing beauty in the world and value that, you know, because I think if artists felt like their art and their creative expression was valued and honored, they might not turn to substances as much to cope with the current reality that we live in.
You know, that's crazy. Somebody said to me the other day that you're a self-proclaimed person who has a mental illness, and you see reality differently, or something. It was something, right. And I said to them, it's not that I see reality differently. That's not where my mental illness is. My mental illness lies in the fact that I can't cope with how bad the reality really is.
Yes. And that's true for a lot of artists. And I think a lot of artists turn to art to make sense of what they can't make
sense
of. That's
exactly
right.
What.
Art is a way to abstract reality and to present it in a way that's more digestible, more human, more... You know, that's why political art is really impactful, right? Because it takes something that's just politics and turns it into a medium that any person, whether they're 6 or 60, you know, can make sense of differently. Yeah. You don't have to be political to understand it. And, you know, and I think your point, too, about... I do think there is you know, one of the big debates, like, is it something in the mind, right? Like, is there something about the brain of a person with mental illness or addiction that makes them more creative? You know, Van Gogh is, like, one of the most obvious examples people turn to. People say Leonardo da Vinci had ADHD. That's why he invented so many things, right? And I think that you bring up a really great point in the relationship between what I see between people with a mental illness, with addiction, and who are creative, is they see the world as it is, and it's a hard thing to cope with.
It really
right?
is. It absolutely is. And
yeah,
it's just, we try, I try, I don't know about everybody, I try through the art that I create to show the general population as a whole exactly what it is I feel when I see the things I see or say, the things I say, because when I tell somebody I love them, I mean it. And it's not just like an emotion to me. Like some people just say, oh, you know, it's just an emotion. It's actually something I feel. It's like a real thing. When I'm sad, I'm sad. And I don't want to get out of bed, and every day seems like it's raining. And it's just, it's really, it's, I guess, it's sensational, but it's also, it's really beautiful. And
Right. You could flip the whole dynamic from saying, oh, this person's depressed or anxious or, you know, from being a problem to being, you know, being like, well, that's normal. You know, it seems pretty normal to move through this world and have, you know, if you're a sensitive, emotionally open person, to have a strong response to what we see in the world. And then
I want to write about it.
In your poetry, and I hope you'll be sharing some poetry with us this segment, is a great example. When I hear your poetry, I see you different. I hear you differently. I understand what you do take those emotions that can seem really, you know, not real necessarily. You make them real.
Exactly.
For a person.
Thank you.
I can't hear your poetry and not feel the realness of what's in there.
That's exactly what I try to do with it. That's one of the greatest compliments I've ever gotten. I really appreciate it. And I do have a new poem that I wrote over this little break we had, and I'm going to share it right before Lawrence presents his list. But first, we're going to switch to a song really quick that means a lot to me. And it just explains that even though I've been hurt or we've been hurt, we still gain something from it and we're the winners in the end. All right. This is Vindicated by Dashboard Confessional. Welcome back, everybody.
Let me tell
this
you a story.
This is an ad that started playing by itself. On Recover Together, we are back. All right, that was Dashboard Confessional with Vindicated, and it will bring us into the first poem in a series of poems that I'm going to write. The series is called The Girl from Berlin. That means what it means. Okay, just had to say that. Anyway, this poem is probably one of what I think the greatest poems I've ever written. And it's really powerful, so without further ado, I give you Summoning. On the edge in between addict and advocate, I can't conquer it, but conquering isn't even relevant when you're trying to create the guide to the values and the morals once held inside. Still discovering the meaning for reason or the reason for meaning. I'm leaning towards the latter, but the latter's still leaning, so slow down is what they tell us to do. But how do we know that what they're saying is true when you and me are so far removed from what makes me and what makes you you? But who's to say at the end of the day if anything we do is really wrong anyway? But hey, let's cut the shit. Recovery doesn't mean we really have to be ready to quit. It just means you gotta be willing to see life through another pair of eyes, a pair that sees through the truth and a pair that sees through the lies. Despite how beautiful the world seems to be through the rose-colored lenses, take them off, truly see. All the pain that remains, all the evil that stays, within and without, it's one and the same. And this game that we play, it never works. Never takes the pain away, so why do we struggle forward like soldiers on march? Through desert, through marsh, we pursue that missing part without meaning. Chasing the dragons is what it's called for a reason. Think. The comfort we're constantly after? It's fake by nature. And if we ever want to master this disaster of our own creation, being afraid to live every day won't work. How long till we notice even when we're high it still hurts? But we relent and we settle. For a life of misery, said the pot to the kettle. But soon, I promise each and all of you, all these nights awake in my room will one day pay. And I'll lead the way out, for myself, for my friends, prove there's a way to make it end and not die. The tears I cry bear intrinsic value, and I will use it to provide a light, a beacon in the sky for us now to unite, and finally win this fight for our lives, because even addicts deserve to survive. And that was Summoning. And with that, I'd like to introduce the laggy and lawless Lawrence.
Hello, hello. Since I'm lagging, I just wanted to say I had a thought on our previous conversation. I'm always thinking while everybody else is talking, and then I don't hear a word. I was just thinking, I identify myself as like an empath or HSP, highly sensitive person. And I feel and see the world a lot differently from other people. And I feel it's a gift and a curse. It's the balance of like trying to understand the information I'm getting and also not be burdened by it, you know? It's like somebody who is psychic and maybe communicates with dead people. It's like sometimes you just don't want to talk to dead people, you know what I mean?
They're just constantly around you like,
hey, we have these messages we want to get to our loved ones. You're like, but I just want to have coffee.
Go away. It's Wake breakfast time. I see dead people.
So, yeah, like the curse can also be like you start to realize that you're different from other people, which I think for me is like the touchstone of.
That's hard to deal with sometimes.
People in addiction are
sometimes like. Sometimes it's okay to be like. It's beautiful, but sometimes it's hard to deal with being different. But right. Go ahead, continue. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that was pretty much it. Yeah.
No, I totally agree with you. It's like realizing you're different and then trying to use it.
Like, I don't know if you've ever experienced it with me, but it happens all the time with people that you'll get a text or a call from me at the exact moment that you needed it.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, that happens with it. It happens with a couple people in my lives because I think we, like, gravitate towards each other naturally because we're like, magnets for people who are similar to us. So it just happened the other day with a woman who has a huge impact in my life and I haven't spoken to for a while. She just called me out of nowhere and was like, are you okay? I was like, no. But that was crazy. Like, really, I was... And now you've done it too. You do it regularly. It's really nice to have people like that around, because nobody else really understands. And it's like we're all connected by a string. And when you were a kid and you do the cup thing with the string, and mm-hmm. once it vibrates, you guys, everybody just knows that somebody needs to hear from them.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like my theory on...
that's the real string theory.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely believe that we're all connected in some way. And, you know, sometimes the universe vibrates a certain way and you pick up on the frequency. And
absolutely.
Like, you know how many times I called somebody and they were like, I was just about to kill myself, but then you called, so...
So I did it.
What...
That's good. That's awesome. Yeah. It really is. That's a beautiful gift. And I'm thankful to have you in my life, because I feel like I could count on you to be there if I need it, or even just to know that I need you, even if I don't. Like, it's a great thing.
Absolutely.
So what's on the list for today?
So this is a list that I stole from Thrillist. It's called 8 Human Breakthroughs That Wouldn't Have Happened Without Drugs. And, you know, this is it's a very interesting article, but I just want to preface it with, you know, there's a lot of people that have created a lot of great things in life. And, you know, there's a cautionary tale in it all of, like, yes, you could create something beautiful, but you could also lose your life in the pursuit of creating something, like people we were talking about, like Chris Farley and Robin Williams, yep. and John
Kurt
Belushi,
Cobain and
Kurt Cobain,
Amy Winehouse,
Chris Cornell.
All of them. There's a lot of them.
Like
Robert Johnson.
They poured so much of their heart into their art.
That they didn't have enough left for themselves. That's what I feel like I do. Oh, man.
Absolutely. So we have to remember that there can be a dark side too, and you know, to use caution and seek help when you need it.
And this list is just showing that even addicts can be great at things. It's not to add glory to the fact that drugs were used. It's just to add confidence to the fact that a lot of addicts feel like they're useless. So
right, because I could very easily look at my friend or my neighbor or somebody and say, wow, this person created this, and I know they do X, Y, and Z. Maybe I should too,
but that's not what we're saying. We're just saying that everybody has an equal opportunity to be great. It's just whether or not you choose to be.
All right, so number one here would be Steve Jobs. According to Steve Jobs, taking LSD and smoking pot was actually the key to unlocking his creativity. You know, it kind of explains those trippy iMac colors at the very least. Mm-hmm. Bill Gates, who still won't cop to weed use, admits that he dabbled in LSD in his younger days. I mean, that's kind of a weird flex to admit you did acid, but not weed.
I would never smoke marijuana.
Must be some kind of stigma in the
LSD
tech industry. LSD also unlocked our understanding of DNA. So there was a man called Francis Crick, a Nobel Prize winner, who first identified the double helix structure of DNA. He stated that he didn't think he would have been able to do it without using drugs or without using LSD.
That's crazy. Ain't that something?
Number three, your math textbook is basically Fear and Loathing in Los Angeles. So this talks about Pythagoras, who came up with the Pythagorean theorem. You know, he hung out with a lot of people that use psychotropics. And Ralph Abraham, a mathematician who was involved in expanding the ways we discuss and explore the subject, explained the use of psychedelic drugs has been a major factor in his ability to generate new ideas.
See, it's crazy. A lot of these aren't just inventions. They're like freaking people who, like, discovered natural laws of the world. Oh, man. Apparently acid and other psychedelics equals genius.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes when you open those doors of perception, you know, because
I feel the same way, but I don't want to glorify it, but I definitely feel like it you're absolutely right. It definitely allows you to see things more clearly.
Well, what is it
I
like
mean, what, from the definition of creativity, right, is like thinking outside the box in yeah. some ways, right? And so if you let your brain go outside of the box it's been trained into, it's probably going to pick up on some things. And I think y'all are right. Like, drugs are far and away not the only pathway for that. I actually think a lot of people with mental illness already have that door open, and they're learned, like, so they don't even need drugs, right? Like, that door already exists open. They see the world differently, and they are creative because of that. For other people, it is using drugs to access that point, you know? But yeah, I think it gets that combination between mental illness and addiction is really interesting, because I think a lot of times addiction. And using LSD isn't necessarily addiction, right? I mean, if you choose to go into a structured environment and, you know, do that, like, people use LSD at this point for trauma therapy. So there's specific ways it can be used. But I really think a lot of times it's the mental health part first. And it's not even necessarily, quote, illness. It's just mentally different in the terms of you see the world, you feel the world differently. And then that creativity flows out of that. And then whether you can cope with it or not, I think is a lot of times where addiction comes into play. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's learning to cope with it. That is the hard part. And it's something I still struggle with, because it really is very difficult. I feel so overwhelmed by emotions sometimes. But let's continue the list, because we want to make sure we have time for the bigger picture, of course. And
Let's see, number four, Frankenstein came to Mary Shelley in the middle of a bender. She was in Geneva partying with her future husband and friends, drinking wine and taking laudanum, which is a liquid form of opium. And the less than sober state gave her the bad dream that inspired the novel.
Well, that's not surprising. Have you ever read that book? It is a pretty interesting book, especially for the time it was written.
Let's see. Number five, Philip K. Dick wrote all your favorite sci-fi stories, took all the drugs. Mm-hmm. All of them. He took all of them.
Every drug.
makes sense now when you watch Blade Runner. throughout his life, Dick used amphetamines, weed, acid, mescaline, and PCP. His intake fueled his creativity, but also made him just as paranoid as his characters. Convinced that the CIA, Richard Nixon, and a giant metallic face in the sky were out to get him. That's interesting. Carl Sagan used weed to solve problems.
Huh.
He was admitted major pothead.
Thus, coast to coast. And everything else.
He explained he used marijuana to help him work through problems in his own research.
And signal the
come
aliens.
Up with philosophical concepts that he later put in speeches and lectures. Not saying it was aliens, but it was aliens.
It has to be. Look at the Egyptian Sphinx thing. That's an alien right there. It's a sculpture.
Number seven, cocaine gave us psychoanalysis. So, if you didn't know, Sigmund Freud, he liked to do a lot of blow. And, you know, he had access to it through medical means as a doctor.
What do you need this for? Studying!
I need another kilo.
More experiments.
It's for quote-unquote medical uses.
And then we come up with modern psychology. Look at that. And, wow, this is crazy. I love this list.
So he created the basis that would serve for conventional psychotherapy. So if you ever went to therapy, you're connected to him.
So next time you go to your therapist. No, I'm just kidding. Never mind.
You're like, did you learn everything you know from a cocaine
from
addict?
Cocaine?
and then we have the last one, number eight. Edison drank lots of cocaine wine, maybe too much.
You know, here's a fun fact about cocaine and alcohol. Aside from Ritalin and alcohol, it is the only combination of drugs that, when taken in tandem, your liver biosynthesizes them into a totally new compound. Cocaine, cocaethylene, and then ethylphenidate is when taken in alcohol and Ritalin together, your liver biosynthesizes them both into new drugs, and they are equal. They are twice as potent and twice as toxic.
Mm.
It's pretty cool.
I have heard that.
Only two drugs in the world that cause that reaction with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that was the last one. I mean, Thomas Edison said, "There's no substitute for hard work." Apparently, hard drugs didn't hurt. Maybe helped him get that hard work done.
It probably gave him the drive he needed. But look at that. All of those incredible minds accomplishing so much while at the same time being what society labels as useless. And that is proof enough for me to say that anybody can be capable of anything. And I just want to say right now, real quick, before we take our final break and we come back with the bigger picture, that if anybody's struggling or they want somebody to talk to, I am a fellow struggling addict who is by no means perfect, but definitely wants to get better. And if you want to talk to someone, I'm willing to talk to you. You could reach out to me if you'd like, or you could reach out to anybody. Write the HHR Facebook page. It's not as active as it once was, but I would like to change that. We'll be right back with Recover Together Returns and the bigger picture, but first, Breaking the Habit by Linkin Park. Okay, everybody, we're back, and this is the time for Phoebs, the Titan, to paint the bigger picture.
Hey. Oh, man, good show today. I always do this thing where I end up starting talking about my big picture throughout the whole show, but I'll bring it back. And this is, wow, talk about a hard topic to, like, in some ways it's impossible to paint the bigger picture on this topic because we're talking about creativity, which is defined as expanding beyond the bounds, right? It's a sort of an endless picture. And, you know, I started doing my research about this topic and, you know, it's really evident, I think, in research done amongst artists that you see a higher proportion of reported mood disorders, of schizophrenia, of different mental illnesses that are sort of linked to people being in, you know, creative spaces. But it's very, very difficult to really get to the point of understanding exactly what that link is, or is to say it's definitive. And I think, as we were talking about during Lawrence's list, you know, it can be dangerous to say, oh, that these things are just always intrinsically linked, because there's many, many creative people you could talk to who don't identify as having a mental illness or using drugs. There's many ways people who've been addicted to drugs who are creative have become sober and have continued to have very, very creative lives, you know. So my song choice today, which you heard at the beginning of the show, Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, Anthony Kiedis, who's the lead singer of the Chili Peppers, had a lot of struggles with addiction early in his life, but he's been sober now for decades and is still putting out tremendously powerful and creative music. And I think for him, and I think this is true for a lot of people, stopping your relationship or changing your relationship to drug use, even changing your relationship to the management of your mental illness, doesn't mean your creativity will go away. I think that's the big picture I want to make, the big point I want to make. But rather, you know, rather creativity, if that is something that you feel in your life, can be the solution to getting a grip on mental health and addiction. And it doesn't have to always be that being a creative person means you're going to be fueling your addiction. But rather, if you can see that it's coming from a similar place in your body, whether that is, you know, mentally you being wired to think outside of, to see things differently, to be able to express things differently, to be able to, you know, produce ways of seeing the world, that whether that's in a moment of psychosis or a moment of writing a brilliant novel, right, those are things that are related inside of you.
Who's to say those are two different moments?
They're not necessarily right. And like, you can, you know, and I think Lip brought up the point too, that when you are in a creative process, it produces dopamine, right? So it comes from a similar source in your body, and then it has a similar impact on your body. But I think the reason art therapy and creative therapy are becoming more common is because it can become a tool where you still feel like you can affect your body, you can express yourself, you can let things off your chest, you can let your emotions be expressed, and move away from needing drugs and addiction to be the thing that helps you feel like that reality is being acknowledged. And so I think it's important for us to not walk out of this podcast with the message that all these things always have to go hand in hand, but rather to say, let your creative process be a tool, just like Lip's poetry is a tool by which you can honor where your mind and your body is, right? But still stay on a path toward recovery, so that, because let's be real, like we glorify a lot of these famous people, but how many of them have committed suicide? How many of them have really suffered and struggled, have lost friends, have lost family? And I think to know that there's a path where both things are possible is really, really important. And so that's just a piece. And, you know, I think there's this line in the song where they say, choose not a life of imitation. And I think a lot of times addiction can be fueled by a life of imitation, a life of needing to fit in, a life of saying, well, I see that all the writers who I hang out with are smokers. I see all, you know, all the scientists apparently I hang out with are doing LSD. So I need to be part of that cultural norm. But that's not creative, right? What's creative is to truly be yourself and to choose not a life of imitation.
Even if people don't accept you for yourself, even if people want you to be differently because you don't fit into their parameters, you shouldn't ever change who you are. And that's something that I've had like really, really instilled in me recently, right, through recent events, that I am not the problem and I am not going to be able to fix anything in my life by changing for anybody. Rather, I need to change the people in my life to people who don't think I have or exhibit anything that needs changing.
Right, right. And to be on a path that you are, again, it's staying inside, staying with yourself, right? Staying with who you are and honoring your strengths, honoring your creative process, in a way that you don't let the drugs dictate whether or not you're going to see your creative life through, but rather that you are using your creativity to be in command of your life. And so I think what I would say, and just wrapping this up, is how can you make that creativity inside of you not something that's something not only that you can cope with, but that can be your tool for recovery. Whether that is finding creative outlets to, like this podcast, for example, to process what's going on in your life, whether that is allowing yourself the space to dive into your trauma by creating art around it, and letting rather than, you know, trying to numb yourself out or taking drugs and dealing with it that way. Even being creative in how you think about what you need for your own recovery, which could include thinking outside the box, something like, LSD sort of has been experimentally used, psychedelics have been experimentally used as trauma healing tools. So it's don't shy away. My message is don't shy away from what you are or who you are. But find the ways for your creativity for you to be in command of your creativity.
Absolutely.
And for you to honor it and for you to let it fuel you. And I think in doing that, your relationship to altered states of mind, whether you're born with them from mental difference or you're creating them by using drugs, right? Like letting yourself live in the reality of that altered state, but letting yourself produce and create something, let it get outside of your body.
Exactly.
You know,
show the world.
Keep all
show
of that
world
pent up inside. It's extraordinarily overwhelming and difficult to survive doing that. So this is a big plug for letting your inner artist fly, you know, let your freak flag fly. But let it fly in a way that you're not punishing yourself for it. But rather you're saying, like, I will, you know, F you to whoever is going to tell me that I'm not doing something useful or productive or generative.
This is me.
I know how powerful and important this is.
Yeah, I think the message that I'm getting from you is, like, you know, it makes me think about we're just people that have found the shortcut, or we think we have found the shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we have the cheat code. I want that dopamine pump in my finger so I can press the button and go, okay, you know, but we have to, like, force ourselves to find the long way around again of, you know, getting into art or working on a project that has, like, a longer finish line on it and
right. Sort
of that delayed gratification. I think a lot of addiction is delayed.
Yeah.
The absence of delayed gratification.
That's
knowing that gratification is actually doing a healing process for you, right? That because let's be real, addiction is band-aid, right? It's a lot of band-aids and band-aids and band-aids over something that once healed, once acknowledged, once seen. mm-hmm. right? Where that long road that Lawrence is talking about to dedicate yourself to a creative, expressive project is going to get you to that same place of relief. But it actually is healing something.
Yeah, no,
you
addiction know, is like putting a it's like putting a Band-Aid on a festering wound. It's not going to mm-hmm. do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So honor your wounds as your as truly your artistic ingredients.
Well, Phoebes.
But
oh, create. Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's
sorry,
it.
I just wanted to say thank you. That was an absolutely beautiful bigger picture. And Lawrence, your list was wonderful as well. And I feel like this was a truly, truly, like, moving episode. And I just wanted to say real quick in summation that really the moral of this whole episode is just be yourself and accept the gifts you were given, even if sometimes it feels like a curse. And you don't have to be any different for anyone else. And you don't have to be afraid to be yourself. And just you feel your emotions and show your emotions. Love as if nobody else was looking, because it doesn't matter if people judge you or think that you're different or weird because of the way you feel things. It's all right to be who you are, and it's all right to struggle, and it's okay not to be okay. So if anybody needs to talk, you know we're here, and when you recover together, you're way more likely to recover forever. All right, everybody. Hopefully we'll see you next week. This is Lip, and that was Phoebes and Mr. Laggy Lawless Lawrence. And that was Recover Together. Have a good week.
Later.